RadioInfluence.com.
And welcome to another edition of the Rock Stops Here podcast. Thanks, man, so much for finding me. Please tell your family, your friends, your enemies, your frenemies, subscribe and let's build this bad boy. I didn't realize it takes a while to build this thing, but no, thanks so much, man, everybody for listening in. All right, we got a great guest today. Ira Kaufman, 45 years as a professional sports reporter, journalism. He is now a very successful podcaster. He covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's been down here in Tampa Bay for a long time, formerly from New York. He still has that New York accent. He is well-loved by everybody, but you know what? If you're being paid for 40-plus years in your profession, and it's a tough profession, you got to be doing something right. And Ira is loved by everybody. He gives us all some advice in this podcast, The Rock Stops Here, this episode, episode number 4. He gives us some advice that we can use no matter what field we are in. I think it's fantastic. And it's not so much on this run. We all know the Buccaneers and Tom Brady, and Brady continues to make news, and it was unbelievable. It's the journey to get here. It's his past, working for Bill Parcells, the first Super Bowl, and just you know, what makes Ira tick, man? How does this guy do it? How has he been able to do it and stay relevant and not trying to be the next big thing? So I think you're going to enjoy this. Now, you know, I hit on the, a couple of podcasts ago, I hit on the, you know, the health. I had a very, very serious gallbladder operation. I ended up having to wear a catheter. There was a complication afterwards, for a week at home. I lost 28 pounds. It was tough. I was a little shaky, man, if I was going to make it or not, but I feel great now. Trying to take, you know, good care of myself, I can't stop drinking my beer. But what are you going to do? You know, you gotta have something, right? But Ira had a scare. And the reason why I wanted to start on this is it really is amazing with modern day medicine and what they can do. I remember a couple of years ago, Ira had a scare. I thought it might be the ticker. You know, he had to go in, and it turned out he was okay. Thank God. I think when you get the word that you might have something wrong with your heart, or you're blocked, or your kidneys aren't functioning, or your liver is shot, you know, or the C word, right? And I'm not talking about corona. I'm talking about, well, that could be scary too, but you know what I'm talking about. We've all known somebody that's passed or has dealt with cancer, right? Any one of those, it becomes the mental worry, you know? And I remember when Ira was going through this, it turned out to be okay. Years and years and years ago, I was pitching on a baseball team. I was working at Bay News 9, and I think it was a physical, and did they put me on? I think they put me on the treadmill type thing, and it was like, ooh, something's not right here. Go see a cardiologist, and then they did some tests where you lay on the thing in the hospital, the emergency room, not the emergency room, the operating room. Well, before that, they do this test where it goes all around your heart and this and that, and it still was registering there's something wrong. And I can remember still going to work. I wasn't that old. We're going back. I was maybe, I don't know, 40, 45 years old, maybe. No, I wasn't even that. No, I remember the team I was pitching on. I was probably 41, and I might have, you know, do I need bypass? And I remember it was the worry that stayed in my mind the entire time, trying to go to work, trying to go to the store, trying to do stuff, whatever. And it was the mental thing. And I went in for the procedure, and it turned out to be a false positive, and I was okay. And thank God. a good friend of mine, my best buddy, Whitney Johnson. We found out that we grew up, you know, 15 minutes from each other and never knew each other back in Jersey and ended up being best friends here in Florida. And he had a quadruple bypass. He's okay. But I remember seeing him before that, you know, and it's the mental thing. The reason why I just wanted to start this off is Yankees manager Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone is 47 years old. And when I saw the news the other day that, wow, he's got to have a pacemaker. Is that a damn pacemaker? And on the, you know, looks on the outside, he looks fantastic. And I'm like, wow, he needs a pacemaker. And then I didn't realize he had open heart surgery back in 2009. So there was something going on in his past. Here he is, the Yankees manager. You're in spring training. Probably didn't say too much, but he was feeling weak. Wasn't feeling himself. And you know how it is, guys, especially as men. We're like, oh, this will pass. I'll let this thing go. Right? Am I right? You know, women, man, they got a nosebleed. You know, they got congested nose. They're going to get checked out. But we, me included, you know, used to put it off. You know, it'll pass. I'll be fine. And so he mentioned it to Cashman and to the Yankees, and his heartbeat was like in the 30s. And okay, you have to have a pacemaker. Oh, he's going to be out for a while. He was out for 3 days. 3 days as a pacemaker installed, put in, and he did, this is amazing, after the procedure of having a pacemaker put in your chest, he FaceTimed Cashman. FaceTimed him right after the procedure. Did you believe that? And then he did a Zoom call for media the next day, a day after. And he was like, I can't believe I feel so good. Oh, my God. And now with the virus still out there, he had to drive to the spring training facility in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field to get his COVID test. He still had to pass COVID because he had been in the hospital for surgery. And, you know, you go into a hospital. It's like when I had my gallbladder surgery, it was during COVID. And you're like, oh, you see them all with the mask. They're dressed from head to toe. And you're like, oh, my God, I hope I don't even get COVID. But I was just, I was on a different, oh, my God, I was worried. But, and so he drives to Steinbrenner Field. He gets his COVID test. This is 2 days. This is only 2 days after having the pacemaker. And he said he saw the sunshine. He saw the fields. And he felt like, I want to stay. I want to be out on the field. No, you got to go back. We got to get the results from your COVID test. He gets it. He passed. And boom, 3 days after having a pacemaker installed, he was managing. And not only was he managing, he drives to work and he went out on the practice fields and Gerrit Cole was throwing a live BP and he watched that. And he wanted to see how Gerrit Cole is like, man, it looked great to see him back there. And then they played a spring training game this past weekend on Saturday in Bradenton against the Pirates. And so, you know, you get on the bus and blah, blah, blah. And there he is managing. And I just think that that's very, very encouraging. So whatever, you know, guys, what you got something, man, it's your body. We got to get it checked out. We have to get it checked out. You know, beat it. Beat it ahead of it. Aaron Boone, all the best to you, man. All the best to you. All righty. I tell you what we'll do. I'm going to bring on this interview here. Now, this is, like I said, Ira Kaufman, a longtime journalist. He has made it a long time in this business. How does he do it? How does he stay relevant? Here he is, and I'll hit you on the back after this. The sage of Tampa Bay sports, Ira Kaufman. All right, the legendary Ira Kaufman. How many years professionally have you been in this business, Ira?
45.
45 years. Do you still enjoy it as much as when you were starting out, Ira?
Rock, nobody gets into my business, which was print journalism, to make a fortune. It's very rare. You got to love it. You got to have the passion for it. I was a big sports fan, like you, growing up in the New York, New Jersey area. What's funny is I never rooted for the New York teams, Rock. I never did. I always took the opposite teams of my older brother. It was a sibling rivalry. In other words, he loved the Celtics with Bill Russell. This is mostly in the 60s we grew up.
Right.
So I took Chamberlain and the 76ers. Meanwhile, he's winning 11 titles and I got one. He's killing me. He likes the Raiders from the AFL, so I take the Chiefs from the AFL. He likes the Dodgers with Koufax and Drysdale. I got the Giants with Mays, McCovey, and Marichal.
Wow.
So we had this great rivalry, and I stuck with that. And then, you know, Rock, I went to college, and I had a professor who said, you got a little bit of a flair for writing, Ira. You put things in a nice, you know, way. But, you know, you overwrite sometimes. So she gave me some tips, but she was very encouraging. And you need that along the way. I went to NYU grad school. And by the time I did all the coursework, Rock, I was ready to do my thesis. It's all I needed for the master's. And I got a job with UPI in 1976 in New York. The Daily News building, the one with the globe in the lobby from the Superman movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my home.
Wow.
And it was great experience. How to write on deadline, how to be accurate, how to be fast. And then I got transferred down here in 85 with UPI and worked out of the Tribune office. So I got to know all the Trib sports writers. Nick Puglisi, the late Paul Smith was the sports editor. So, Rock, I joined the Trib in 90 when UPI was basically going out of business. I'm always one step ahead of the hangman. It's amazing. I've been very fortunate. And 25 years at the Tribune, 25 years. What an experience. And, you know, we came to love the Tampa Bay area, just like everybody who lives here. I did something with Eddie DeBartolo the other day, Rock, a podcast. And my first question to Eddie, you can live in Malibu. You can live in Monaco.
Right.
St. Moritz.
Right.
Wherever, Pacific Palisades. Right. You're living in Tampa Bay, Florida. Why? He goes, what's not to love? Rock, you've been here all the time and you ain't leaving.
Right.
So then one day, Rock, I'm a 62-year-old sports writer with a job. And the next day, I'm out of a job. The Trib folded. We didn't even get to put a final edition out.
Wow.
And that's a tough age. You know, I didn't want to take Social Security early. I wasn't ready for Medicare yet. So here comes Joe Buxman. And these two guys, they've been after me for a while. And I always rebuffed them. No, I like print journalism. I like the Tribune. Well, Rock, how many jobs are there available for a 62-year-old guy who wants to stay in Tampa?
None.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
And it's been a great relationship, Rock. For 5 years, I'm a columnist. They don't tell me what to write. They don't edit it, you know, except for mistakes. And we do this podcast, which is highly, you know, popular. And, you know, some Buck fans are on top of me a little bit, Rock, because I'm not enough of a Buck fan. But I can't shake my heritage, which is you don't root. So that's been a balancing act for me. But it's called Joe Buck's Fan, Rock. So obviously we're Buck-centric. And the more successful the Bucks are, Rock, the more successful the company is.
Now, I'm looking at you, Ira, and I'm thinking 45 years, basically, 45 years. There's got to be, is there one thing that you think is the reason why you've been able to be in this business as a journalist / entertainer now doing your podcast? What is it? How have you been able to stay in this business for 45 years? What do you think
it is? It's one word, Rock, and it ain't writing. It ain't a smile. It's relationships, and you know that. Never give up your sources. Never, never, never. Unless you get a story that says the Bucks are leaving town, something of that magnitude. But other than that, you never say something that a guy said was off the record. You never do that. And I think kids coming out of grad school, Rock, they don't realize that once you break your word to some of your key sources, then that word is going to get around to all your sources and you will be shut down and you won't have anybody to talk to. I'll give you an example, Rock. Over the years, this happened dozens and dozens of times. Somebody said something to me and said, keep that quiet, keep my name out of it, this and that.
Right.
I take the information, Rock, and I write it under my name, like I'm the authority, their name never appears in the story or the column. Nobody can trace it, and I don't ascribe it to a high Buccaneer source or anything like that. I don't give any clues. I write it because I'm saying it. And then, Rock, a week later, it happens. And all of a sudden, people say, Jesus, Ira Kaufman knew that a week ahead of time. How does he do that? My source is happy because their name is not linked to what I said.
I see.
But the information is accurate.
Yeah.
And if somebody gives you something that turns out to be false, you never trust that person again.
I gotcha.
That's what it's all about, right?
I gotcha. You know, I was just thinking back in the days when you were in New York. Did you cover Bill Parcells?
I covered the 79 Giants with Perkins. And then 2 or 3 years later, Perkins left for Alabama and Parcells came in.
Was he as intimidating as he just looked from the outside? What is it like to cover a Bill Parcells-led team?
You got to have thick skin, right? Because he used to read everything. He used to read everything. Now he's living in Jupiter and he's going to, he loves the horses. He goes up to.
He was always a Jersey guy. Is he? He loves it down there.
Yeah. He loves it down there. I'll give you a quick story about Parcells, Rock. This is a true story.
Yeah.
Roy and I went down to Miami. Oh, it must be about 10 years ago. And Parcells was involved with the Dolphins at that time. He only lasted a year or two, but he managed to turn them around. I mean, they went from like 4 wins to 11 with him running football operations. So anyway, Rock, we go for an exhibition game. It was a Saturday night against the Dolphins. You know, the Bucs in Miami, you always play every year in August. So we get there about, 5 o'clock for a 7:30 game. We go in the media entrance. We're going in the elevator. We're going up to the press box. And Harvey Green was there, the Dolphins.
PR guy for the Dolphins, yeah.
So he's in the elevator with me and Roy. Parcells walks in the elevator. He remembers me. Hey, how you doing? I get the acknowledgement. So at that time, he dropped a lot of weight, Parcells, at that time. I don't remember what the heck he was doing. So the doors close, and we're going to the fifth floor. He's going to the third floor, the suites or whatever. Before it gets to the third floor, I say to him, Bill, looks like you dropped a lot of weight. What's going on over there? He goes, Ira, I'm doing a lot of running. And then before the bell rang for the third floor, I said, from what I hear, it's away from the media for the most part. And he walked and the doors opened. Harvey Green, his mouth came open because nobody jokes with Parcells like that.
No.
And he walked out and he took 3 steps and he turned around before the door closed again. And he goes, I miss you, Ira. I miss you.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
That's what it's about.
That is awesome. Is there one specific thing that stands out to you, Ira, of all the things that you, the stories you broke, things that you were very happy maybe with in 45 years, is there one thing that's at the top or is that too tough to narrow?
It is. I think it's shutting down the vet, and I'll tell you why, Rock. First of all, the Bucs played a perfect game. I think that's the greatest game in Buc history.
And just to let everybody know, this was the NFC Championship going on, 18 years, something like that.
That's right.
Okay,
and NFC Championship. Very few people thought the Bucs were going to win because Philly had their number. They beat them in the regular season also at the Vet. So last game at the Vet, you know those crazy fans, Rock. So I got to make my pick for the Tribune. You know, I got Eagles 24, Bucs 20. All right. So with 5 minutes left, they let us go down from the press box, to the field. They don't do that anymore.
No.
But in 2002, they did that. We all go behind the Buccaneer bench, and we're watching this. And after Barber's unbelievable return, 27-10, that game's over. It's 3 minutes left in the game, and I get to see Sapp, Simeon, Brooks, Keenan McCardle, Keyshawn Johnson. They're all turning around, and they're addressing Eagle Nation. And Eagle Nation is stunned. And Keyshawn's saying, how do you like that, Philly fans? Shut down the vet. We shut down the vet. We shut you up. And I got to witness this whole thing. And then, Rock, and it took a long time to open the locker room because they were doing the George Halas presentation for being the NFC champ. And it's like 9 degrees. We're freezing. I did a quickie interview with J.P. Peterson. He was working for FLA at that time. And I said, the Bucs just played a perfect football game and waiting for the door to open. Finally, the door opens. I'm behind the barricade. Keyshawn Johnson's the first guy that came out. He was going back on the field because he needed better cell phone reception. He couldn't get it in the locker room. So he's going out on the field. He opens the door, and he sees me behind the barricade. And Keyshawn Johnson says, "Step inside, Ira. They're waiting for you." And here, on one of the greatest days of their life, Messrs. Sapp, Brooks, Barber, Rice, and Allstott, they formed a quick jury. And I walk in, and they all go, "Here he is, guys. Here's the guy that picked the Eagles to beat us." Our hometown paper didn't have any faith in us.
Isn't that something?
It was a hell of a day.
Isn't that something?
And then, Rock, my wife, you know, I was going to the Super Bowl every year no matter what. So I knew I was going to San Diego.
Right.
And my wife and I, you know, when the Super Bowl was in a nice city like New Orleans, my wife wanted to go. If it's in Minneapolis, she goes, "Hey, you can go." So this year we knew it was in San Diego. So we build a trip off it.
Beautiful.
So we were going to go up the California coast.
Nice.
All the way to San Francisco.
Oh, the A1.
And it's route, Route 1. Yeah, we're not going to take the highway.
Right.
And we're going to stop in, you know, mid-coast and bunk down. So it's going to be like a three-day trip to get to San Francisco. We're not in any rush. So, Rock, I get back up to the press box. And now, you know, it's 9 o'clock. It's on deadline. The Trib wants the stories. I'm typing away. My cell phone rings. It's my wife. I figure something bad happened at the house.
Uh-oh.
"What's up, honey?" "Ira, I know you're on deadline, honey, but I just want to tell you this. Your son and your wife are coming out to San Diego, you know, next Thursday night, and we're planning this big trip. But now the Bucks are in the game, and we're certainly going to get two tickets to go to that game. So the pressure's on, Ira. You find a way to get us to Qualcomm Stadium."
Whoa.
I ended up buying two tickets. The Bucks.
I never knew this.
$600 a piece.
Isn't that something compared to now?
And that's a memory that those two will never forget.
Wow. Wow.
How you like that, right?
Wow. Wow. All right. In closing, is there any advice to maybe someone young, maybe we got a parent listening, somebody that wants to get into this business? Because now, Ira, everybody can be their own star on their own Facebook, their Instagram. They can do their own podcast. But is there still basics that you've got to follow if you're going to do this kind of thing that you have done for 45 years in this new age, Ira?
I think the biggest advice I have, Rock, besides veering towards radio and TV rather than print. I mean, that's just the way it's going.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that print's not going to be around. Doesn't mean that. And you can be a star in print if you're good at it. But, Rock, my main advice is, you know, your word is your bond, your reputation, your reputation. So do the right things. You're always going to know what the right things are. Do the right things. If you have to be negative, and you do have to be negative at times, don't be cruel and don't make it personal. You know, for example, a couple of years ago at the end of that season, and most people thought Dirk Cutter was going to get canned. You know, it's two straight years of 5-11.
The Bucks coach
and
right at
so
the time.
I wrote two different columns. One said Dirk Cutter's got to go. And 3 days later, I wrote Jason Light has to go. He has to go. And I gave the reasons why. Not personal. The mistakes that were made in personnel. Not just Roberto Aguayo. I mean, a series, free agency, whatever. And, you know, I said, if they get rid of Cutter and keep Light, that means he survived two coaching changes because he survived the Lovie Smith. And that's very rare. That doesn't happen. Usually you get rid of the general manager with the coach. And it took a while to repair my relationship with Light, but now he returns my phone calls. So I think that's a credit to him. But I did what I needed to do. I could have passed on that column and not written it, but it was a column that needed to be written. And you know what? Maybe it was a little premature because Jason Light's resume looks pretty darn good right now.
And your resume is incredible.
Thanks, Rock.
Ira Kaufman, thank you, buddy. All right, thank you, Sage. I'm going to have Sage back on, and we'll get into what it was. You know what it's like now, man, here in Buccaneer territory with Brady and. You know, but I just wanted to, wasn't it something where he said, your word means everything. Your word means everything. And I think that hit it on the head for me, because ever since I came down here and I noticed everybody likes Ira, what is it? What is it about him? And it's his word. You got to be truthful, honest. Don't throw anybody under the bus, you know? That means everything, everything. So thank you, Sage. We'll have you back on. All right, a couple of things to, you know, I wanted to touch on. Did you see the Tom Brady rookie card went for $1.3 million? $1.3 million. And that isn't like it's an old Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth card. That's Brady. That's Brady when Brady was a rookie with the Patriots, and now he's still playing. And that rookie card, that's not that long ago, 22 years ago? You save a card for 22 years? A number one pick? Not a number one pick. My God. But once he got the reins with the New England Patriots, he skyrocketed and he's worked and he's still working hard. But $1.3 million. I never saved anything. I have had memorabilia over the years. I was always better. I'd rather have a picture. You know, I was not into autographs, card collecting. But obviously card collecting, it's a big business and memorabilia. But that just blew me away. Even if I had that kind of dough. What I spend on a card, a rookie card, a football card, hey, if somebody's willing to pay it. Brady was funny. Did you see Brady's response? He said, "Well, I'm going to have to clean out my basement." Brady does have a good sense of humor. Even if you're a Patriot fan and you're pissed off that he's down in Tampa Bay now, come on, man, you got to give it up to the guy. You got to give it up to the guy. And I was just thinking after having Ira on, you know, when we say who's the biggest bust in the NFL, Ryan Leaf, doesn't he always come on? You talk, stop talking to me. You know that soundbite, that thing that he did, right? What about Josh Freeman, the former Buccaneer first round pick? He was the 17th overall first round pick, Josh Freeman. A number one pick, and he was pretty damn good on some bad football teams with not a lot of talent. Josh Freeman was player of the week two times, I believe, the year that he led them to a 10-6 record, 10-6. And it was partway through his fifth year, and he was done. He was released at 25 years old. What is the real true story? Now, we have all heard a lot of rumors, and there were some telltale signs. Falling asleep in meeting rooms. All right, there are NFL players, I know this over the years, that have fallen asleep in meeting rooms. So that stuff is boring as hell. Late, you know. There was a time where he had his football camp where his name is on it, the Josh Freeman football camp. He did an interview on a local radio station, 620 WDAE. And I remember listening to that. I'm thinking like, wow, he sounds like he's sluggish or something's not right. This is in the morning. There's something going on there. How do you go from a 10-win season with the Bucs, a number one pick, 6'6", 240, built like Adonis? I used to go to practices and see his arm. His arm was really, really good. And then at 25 years old, you're released. He bounced around. I think it was the Vikings, the Giants, the Dolphins. It might have been with the Colts. He was with the Fall Experimental League, the Brooklyn Bolts. Boy, when you were number one pick, and then you're in the Fall Experimental League with Brooklyn Bolts. And then I remember he was trying the CFL. Hey, give the CFL a shot, man. The Montreal Alouettes. I remember he did an interview where he said, "I'm so excited to play football. I can't wait." And I'm pretty sure it might have been two teams with the CFL, but I know that they were training in Vero Beach, Florida. And I remember there was a local reporter that interviewed him, and he said, "I'm so excited. I feel great. What a great opportunity." He goes up to Montreal, and it was a couple of weeks later. He was buried in the depth chart, and he quit. And he said he retired, and that was it. Now, I know he was seen at a job fair for the FBI. He was interested in that, but no one has ever, boy, he has just been out of the public eye totally. What happened? What? Why? How do you fall that far? I just looked him up Do you know that Josh Freeman just turned 33 years old in January? 33 years old. Now, 2021. Just unbelievable. But when busts are thrown around, Josh Freeman is at the top of the list for me, because I just would love to really, really know. And I'm not going to speculate, because I've heard all the rumors too, you know. But when you talk about busts, man, oh my God. All right. I want to check in with you. How you doing? How you doing now? I do notice. Have you gotten your vaccine yet? I haven't. Still not quite. I know I'm an old man, but I'm not there yet at that age to be allowed to get it. I can't wait to get it. And I saw today a survey of Americans and how that percentage has really jumped up of Americans saying, you know what? I want the vaccine. Because when it first came out, remember that? It was like, I'm not taking that. I don't want to put that in my body. That's fine. That's fine. Me? I'll tell you, a guy that I know that has a restaurant bar in Tampa, early 60s, had a great line. He's like, I don't like being in these uncompromising situations where I didn't plan on that. And all of a sudden I'm indoors, I'm with a lot of people, and like, dang, you know what I mean? I don't want to be worrying about it. You know what I'm saying? And I feel the same way. I'll be able to travel a little bit. Look, I'm still going to be cautious and washing my hands and with the mask, but I mean, and I'll tell you, we've been going to Clearwater Beach, on the beach, and also Mandalay Bay, the main drag, up and down, and it is tourist season. It is spring break down here. It is Northerners that are tired of being closed up north where everything is shut down, and the shitty weather up there, and damn. I mean, and these bars, Florida's 100% open. Now, a friend of mine that lives in my neighborhood is in charge of a very popular, high volume, location restaurant bar on Clearwater Beach. And I was walking my dog about 3 weeks ago, and I said, hey, man, blah, blah, blah. We're talking and this and that. And I said, what about, you see Hulk Hogan's got a place? And then he's like, well, my place more, you know, they're coming in for the food and this. And it's not going to affect us, our thing. And he said, look, we're 100% open, but we're not want to do that. We're still practicing some social distancing because we don't want to be on Facebook. Like, oh, my God, that's a super spreader. But I'm telling you, outside, you know, down here, man, wow. But you know what? It's also good to see, because of the economy and jobs and the, you know, people are getting hired down here because it's spring break. And man, so anyway, things are looking up. That's my advice for, you know, to hang in there, man. Things are looking a little bit better now. And there, like I said on my last one, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I just can't wait to get mine, and we'll be good. My wife already got hers because she worked in the healthcare. It does. And there you go. All right. One more thing. I am going to do some baseball with a couple of guests. I got a friend that is such a character coming up very soon. We've got WrestleMania coming. So I'm going to be bringing on a couple of wrestlers, a couple of things planned. And I occasionally hit on a few things that I see in the sports or entertainment world. But what I'm learning as we're going along, guys, with the podcast. It's totally different than a daily show, because with a daily show, you're up to the minute, everything. And if I say something here on the podcast, it's once a week. It's going to be outdated. The news cycle is 24 hours, 48 hours, you know? I mean, I listen to a lot of different podcasts. One of them is Opie from Opie and Anthony, the Opie Radio podcast, and with cancel culture, Paris Hilton. You know who Paris Hilton is, right? She looks good. She did a sex tape. She's got a lot of money. Remember, Paris Hilton was really, really trending years ago. Not so much anymore, but somebody posted on YouTube an interview that she did on Opie and Anthony's radio show a couple of years back, 10 years ago, and how she was treated. They're shock jocks. You know, they were busting her, you know, her chops. She was just, oh, it's great. Oh, it's okay. She wasn't really giving them anything. And I really didn't. I went back and looked, and it wasn't that bad. But boy, oh boy, her fans. And so they're trying to cancel Opie Radio. Well, Opie Radio, the Opie and Anthony show has been canceled for like 7 years. So he got all this hate on his Instagram. And all of her fans, because they looked up Opie, and it wasn't Anthony Cumia. He's got his own business now, a different business, Compound Media. It wasn't this Jim Norton, who was a third wheel. He does a show with this Sam Roberts on XM Sirius Radio. And so they just Opie Radio podcast, and they bombarded him. Well, it was free publicity for Opie. Opie loved it. And I heard him. He was very honest. He's like, you know what, man? I'm gonna ride this all the way to the bank. These are downloads. These are clicks for me. And you know what? It'll be done probably by tomorrow. One more day. You know, the news cycle is 24 to 48 hours, and that is about it. But my whole point is, listening to that, I'm like, he's right. The news cycle is fast. It's the next day. Something big, something goes viral, boom, boom. So when you do a once a week podcast, I got to stay away from current stuff or something that's going to carry, you know, for the week. I'm learning. We're all learning together. So we're going to grow this bad boy. And if you are following me and listening this far, and even after the Ira interview, I really appreciate it, man. Because I am in this. No matter what other gigs I have, I am going to keep this thing. This thing isn't going to go anywhere. I'm going to grow this bad boy. I'm going to learn what works. What do you like? You can hit me up too. Hit me up on social media. You can direct message me. You can message me. You know what I mean? My DMs are open. Tell me what you like. Do you like more of me? Do you like more of a guest? Longer interview? Do you like a couple of different things that I hit on? Would you rather get right to the guest of the day? So I'm going to figure it out and see how it works. But we're going to grow this thing. And if you're here from the beginning, thank you. Thank you. I see you somewhere. You got a beer on me. One last point, though. And I just, it surprised me and it didn't. Les Miles. Highly successful, he was anyway, at LSU, not at Kansas. He has sucked with his teams at Kansas. I don't even know, did they win a game last year? They're bad. But Les Miles, and again, people can go back. Here's another piece of advice. Don't do anything stupid, because it can come back to haunt you 10, 15 years down the road. He's been coaching Kansas, the Jayhawks, the last couple of years. But this guy was a peahound, a womanizer, college student girl womanizer at the university that he's the head coach. Did he think that he is holier than thou, that he was going to get away with it? He must have. You can't be this stupid. Les Miles, cancel culture. He did this stuff at LSU. You can look it up. Oh my God, this latest report from years ago, his name popped up 56 times, cringeworthy stuff. He wanted the girls that were students, co-eds. He's now 67, so he's in probably 60, right? Or late 50s. You can't be messing with 18, 19-year-old girls at the university that you are working. You're making millions. You're the head coach at LSU. You want it that bad? If that's your thing and you want 18 and 19 and 20-year-old co-eds, you're going to do it at your university? Come to my hotel, kissing me, blah, 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 telling his staff, listen, any co-eds that are going to work for the university, I want blondes with big boobs. We want this. We want that. Look, I'm not stupid. This type of thing goes around. There's a lot of men that are creepy, you know, but to do it at where you have an unbelievable gig, you're national championship caliber, LSU. You got it. You got it. You want young girls that bad? Go outside of town or something, or pay for it or wherever. It blew me away, and more comes out where there's smoke, there's fire. You got to be smarter than that. And I'm going to kind of hightail it out of here. Thank you for episode number 4. All right. That's 4 quarters. We just completed our first game. It's you and me. The rock stops here. I'll talk to you next week. Hang in there. Hang in there, guys.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
What would it take to do the deal? Well, again, it depends upon the suitor. Depends upon who the team is. Remember, you know, my theory, you know, what rankles me is to say, you give up, three number ones. Who's number one? There's no such thing as a number one. It's first round pick. There are 32 first round pick. Which pick? So let's kind of get into it. So it would depend upon what team we're talking about. What it would cost would depend upon who's paying the price, because everybody has, in terms of draft picks, a different draft pick value based upon that overall number. So rather than going through 20 scenarios of who might trade for him, what you would want, I think the Texans would, let's start here, would like to do a deal, if they need to do it, with a team that has a quarterback that they like. Because you're not only removing Deshaun Watson, if that's indeed what they decide to do, but now you've got nothing. So you need to at least to be serviceable, decent, preferably a chance to be good. And then I think it would take 6 picks. I think it would take 6 picks. It would take a 1, 2, and a 3 this year, and probably the same next year. Now, next year, you don't know where those picks are going to be. So you are trading it blind faith. Now, how do you judge that? You have to look at a next year's pick as middle of the round, because you don't know for certain who's going to be good or who's going to be bad. That first, second, or third round pick next year may be higher than you thought or lower than you thought. You don't know.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.